We've talked to the guys about their interviews. It's Alistair that gets them when they've finished. We haven't heard from you before. Tell me about your history in fielding and Platt.
Well, I feel like a part-timer because I was only there for 7 years. I did my apprenticeship and just joined the drawing office for a short while. And I was one of the first in the first batch of redundancies. But they actually did me a favour because the basis I had at Fieldings helped me through the next 40 years. And it worked very well.
Let's go back to the apprenticeship, because I remember John Davis telling me about the block. When you arrived as a new apprentice, you got a block of steel, didn't you? And you had to change its size. It was a cube and you had to change its size. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was a bit of rough sawn mild steel. I can't quite remember the dimensions. Was it 2 inch? And we had to reduce it to 1 inch cube. We started off with a hammer and chisel. Chisels did not have the nice protective plastic bit that goes around them these days. If you missed the chisel, you hit your hand. You used that to start off with to get the majority of the steel off. Then you had a file, which you had to file. Don't forget, you've got how many sides? Is it 6 sides on a cube? Something like that. So you've got to do all the faces. Then after that, you had to scrape it and blue it. And the blue was an engineer's blue. So you had a very flat marking off table. And you'd put the blue onto the table, rub the block onto the table. And the blue bits that you saw, you then had to scrape off. And again, you had to do this on 6 sides. So it was a laborious job. And I think really what they were trying to do was to find out who could actually stick it before they left. But my block, when I finished it, I was quite proud of it. I left it on the windowsill, and the chap who was running the craft school at that time, Bert, decided he needed a bit of mild steel to make something up. So he used my block. I was not very happy with that.
Because I said before, I said to John and the other guys who did all this, did you keep it? Because, I mean, wouldn't it have been lovely now to have had that sitting on your mantelpiece as a memory of your apprenticeship days at Fieldings?
Definitely, it would have been there, but it's not, and it's Bert's fault.
So these guys go out, John and Brian go out and they interview old colleagues, former colleagues from Fielding and Platt. Then it ends up, the recordings come to you. Tell me about what you have to do with them.
Well, my wife and I, Dulcie, she's not here, she's not too well at the moment, but we both do the editing and we also do put pages up on the site. But we come into the archives and we are then given a batch of interviews that John and Brian have done on a memory stick. We take them home, divide them up between us, and we then start going through the recordings, which can be very interesting. Obviously, you take out ums and ahs. But
it's amazing how much time you can save, isn't it?
It's incredible, yes.
You've got to leave the breath in, because people have got to breathe.
Yeah. What shall I say next? The other thing I have had to withdraw, or take out, I've had to take out expletives now and again.
Really?
Terrible. I mean,
unbelievable.
These engineers, you know, they do talk some terrible language sometimes. But it is fascinating. I've actually learned a heck of a lot about the company. I was only there for 7 years, not like some of these people around here. But I now know what happened to the company after I left. I left in 1970, so I was absolutely a youngster then. But I now know what happened to the company after I left through all these interviews. And the editing is quite laborious because it's surprising what people say. There was one interview where there was a man and wife being interviewed. I won't go into names. But while he was being interviewed, she was prompting him in the background. So you just cannot edit it all out. So it made it very laborious trying to sort this lot out. But we managed it in the end.
So what sort of system do you use for editing then?
Well, we get it in MP3 on a stick. We then go into Audacity. Yeah. Do you use Audacity?
I have used it. I don't like it very much because the BBC system that we've got is much nicer. But I know what you mean, yeah.
Well, maybe I'll see if I can nick you. I'm sorry, borrow yours. So, yeah, we expand it in Audacity so that what comes up as a one-hour interview, say, we then stretch it out and we can look at each individual word practically and then just chop it out.
Like me, with my editing, you can recognise the shape, yes, and the waveform on the screen of an or, yes, or whatever, and you can almost edit that out without actually hearing it, can't you?
I actually know when John is going to start speaking because I recognise his voice,
yeah,
in the waveform.
Yeah,
yeah, you get used to it after a while. So yeah, it's very interesting.
People say to me, they say, "Do you listen to your programme on a Sunday? Because this programme is recorded." And I say no, because I heard it for about 12 hours during the editing process, because to edit an hour programme for me can take 12 hours, which some people won't believe, but it does take an awful long time, doesn't it?
It can take a time.
Do you have an aim as to what length you want your piece to go that's going to end up being broadcast?
Actually, that's something else we have to do, because the website can only take 20 megabyte chunks. So we have to... we is my wife and I, because I can't leave her out of this. We chop it down, and it's trying to find where you can cut a subject, and then when a new subject's being started. So you're looking around within a couple of megabytes to see if you can actually stop it there and start a new one. So it's.
And are you recording like the links, like I do, you know, the link to a record or the link to the next person? Are you actually recording your own voice and saying the next piece is John Davis talking a load of old rhubarb? Or?
No, I don't, because John does that himself.
He does that. So they do that for you, do they?
Yeah. So, no, I just literally chop it up.
Because, I mean, you have to know who's talking and a little bit just a background about what their sort of credentials for talking are, don't you, really?
Yeah. Again, I know quite a few of the people that have been interviewed. I wasn't there that long, but I do know quite a few of them. So, yeah, you know the background and you understand what's being talked about, which is very useful.
And as the editor of this, have you got sole right to decide what actually makes it to the website, or do you have to go back to these guys and get it verified?
I send my recording back to John in various forms, and I always say to him, is that okay? So far, I think he's only come back once and said, you've missed a bit. I started that interview twice, he said, and you've got both the starts on there. Can you please take that off?
It's easily done.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think it's important very often that somebody else, John, perhaps you can take the answer to this, you know, that somebody else listens through, because you do get a bit word blind, and you do get, you've heard it and heard it and heard it, and you miss things. What do you think? Yeah.
Well, that's perfectly true. I mean, Alice has just mentioned one where he sort of introduced the thing twice, and so I had to go back to him. We've had a couple of problems lately because some of the things he sent over has been a fraction less than 20 megabytes, yes, but my computer wouldn't accept them. So we had to liaise together and go and collect and deliver CDs and that with the interviews on. And so I can... all three of us sort of do it, but I've been doing quite a few lately of actually looking at it all and then putting it on the website. So we've got to put each audio clip, put the first audio clip on, attach the first person's photograph, then add a little note underneath of what it's about, and then write a synopsis all down the side so that you might do three audio clips, and then three synopses. And then if there's any photographs to add, we add those as well. And I go back and forth to make sure it's all correct. And eventually I push that publish button.
And when you do that, you know, and everybody that looks at that thinks that's just so easy, don't they? So they read it on the website and hear it on the website, think, this must be pretty simple. Yeah. Not though, is it?
It's not, no, but it is interesting. And we have actually finished all the ones we've got at the moment from John and Brian. But we've actually got some more interviews that were done by Ollie. So my wife and I have got to sit down, and not only do we have to edit them, but we've got to produce the pages and put it up on the site. So it keeps us out of mischief.
It certainly will. And as I've heard from these people, they're going to carry on to their 100, so you've got a little bit more to do. Alistair, your wife, though, she was going to come and tell us about how she's looked after Fielding & Platt's email account. That's not actually going to Fielding & Platt. It's the email account that gets you messages, isn't it?
Yeah, she basically looks after it and keeps an eye and sees what's coming in. And it's quite incredible what comes in from around the world. We've had somebody from Canada asking questions. Quite often people have got Fielding equipment, presses, engines or whatever, somewhere in the world. And they come to us and say, hang on a minute, we found your website. Can you help me with some
of
the background? Yeah, the background of my engine. Or maybe they've got a problem with it. So quite often we send them on to John Bancroft, because he's looking after the mechanical, if I can put it that way, the side of the site. A couple of ones that came that are quite interesting. Fieldings didn't just, let's just say they didn't just make big machines, they also built boats, ships. And the SS Sabrina is the one that is on the website, and that was built in 1874, and was basically built for the owners or the management, if you like, of the Gloucester Sharpness Canal. If I can put it like this, it was their jolly boat. Now, that boat actually took place in, is it 1912? It was in the pageant on the River Thames. Now, the current owners of the boat have been in touch by email. They've got some more information that they can give us about the boat now. So that hopefully will be sorted out and put on the website. Another one that came in, which interested me, was a chap, I think this came from Australia, from a man called Roy Hercombe. His dad worked at Fieldings, and I worked with him on nights. And Jim and Haggis, who was the other chap in Hydraulic 2, where I was working as an apprentice, I worked with Jim. So I had a communication, and there's actually the ability on the website, if you know anything about this person or this event, then please put a note below. And that note we edit and look at, and we put it on the website if we think it's okay. So I sent a note back to this chap, Roy, saying, I knew your dad, worked with him, and my job as an apprentice, main job, was to go and get the fish and chips from across the road at break time. Yeah. And there'd been comments come back onto the website from another lad who I knew. Well, I knew him as a lad. He's retired now. He's saying, yes, he also worked with Jim, and he also had to get the fish and chips. So
there was two of you doing it.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, when you said that, the other guys around here, all their faces lit up. So you're not the only ones that have gone for fish and chips.
Yes, it was quite handy. There was one just across the road.
Do you use Facebook as well? Because, I mean, Facebook is a thing these days that I talk to my friends in Antigua, in the West Indies, all the time, really. And, I mean, it just their pages. Do you think of having a page dedicated to Fielding and Platt? That would be a good thing to
have. I don't know. I don't use Facebook myself, right. So I haven't got a clue.
How many emails are you getting then? Is it getting faster and faster, getting more and more?
It can be maybe one a fortnight, something like that.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. It's people that have seen the website. They know something about it. Either they've got a relative that worked there or they're after information about equipment that they own.
Yeah.
And it's quite incredible, yeah.
But it's interesting, the Sabrina, because you know the significance of Sabrina, do you? Sabrina was the original name of the River Severn.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the River Severn was originally the Sabrina, so that's why that's so significant for this area.
Yeah.
But it's lovely that you've got all these printed out with the lovely the headings of Fielding and Platt History page headings on them, which is really, really quality, isn't it?
Yeah, before I came along here today, I just went onto the website and printed off the pages that I thought, oh, these might be interesting. So I printed them off and brought them with me.
So does this keep Dulcie pretty busy then? Because she's doing the other bits of the editing as well.
Yes, she's got a computer downstairs and I've got one upstairs, and we tend to do it together, and we can be shouting to one another, you know, oh, by the way, do you know so-and-so? So it's good.
My wife and I are much the same. She does her WI work downstairs. I just do my fiddling about upstairs. Our phones have got a button on them. When you just press the phone, and it rings the one downstairs. Very useful, you know.
Well, we haven't quite.
Especially when you want your tea.
Yeah, we haven't got that communication going yet.